A little more wisdom from the kids to the wrinklies. It was Palm Sunday, but because of a sore throat, 5-year-old Johnny stayed home from church with a sitter. When the family returned home, they were carrying several palm fronds. And I don't know, for those of you who are Catholics, I grew up in a Catholic house till I was about 8 years old. We got excommunicated. I forget what happened. Said something naughty about the Pope, maybe. Anyway, I got busted when I was 8. And had to go to confession once, ruined my whole day anyway. So I can remember my mom bringing home these palm fronds. I used to ask her about it. She says it was Palm Sunday. Didn't mean anything to me. So anyway, here's Johnny. He missed church. And he asked, he says, what they were for? Dad said, people held them over Jesus' head as he walked by. Wouldn't you know it? Johnny fumed. The one Sunday I don't go, he shows up. Ah, kids. All right. More seals. We get into the seals now. Activity, the more specific activity. I'd like to go back to Salente. This is his summer version again. As he opens up his journal, the byline is the next 4 years. Now this is end of July, July 30th this year. He says the next 4 years, the first great war of the 21st century. A couple of quotes. He had traveled to Germany and was in Berlin for the first time. That's the backdrop to his comments. He says, I've been haunted by Hitler since I landed in Berlin. What is it in the human spirit that allows this to happen? And now it is happening again. Our leaders are leading us to destruction. And as in the past, the people are letting them do it. The first great war of the 21st century has begun. It's happening before our eyes. But no one, neither the media nor the politicians, is calling it what it is. Instead, they cover each other, each major development as an incident, as a one-off, a singular event unconnected to the others. See, that's been his genius down through those last 32 years, is connecting everything together. And that's why he's been able to project and forecast, you know, events. As you can see the momentum developing in all these areas. It's not just an outlier, as they call him these days. Eventually, when history is written, the general perception will be that this war, as with World War I and II, notice he's putting him in that class, in that category. This guy's been right for 32 years on this stuff. Also began in Europe. Though a gross oversimplification, the roots of war are widespread. Because the European debt crisis is now center stage in the news, this Trends Journal accordingly is Eurocentered. And he goes on, a lot of it's spent. I'm not going to take a lot of time, but on that. He says, wars don't begin. Now, this is very interesting. He says, wars don't begin with assassinations of archdukes, sinking of the Lusitania, or bombings of Pearl Harbor. Oh, that's what I learned in history. These are flashpoints. The march to war takes years. For example, follow the timeline. The crash of 29, the Great Depression, currency wars, trade wars, all leading to World War II. History is now ominously repeating itself. The panic of 2008, the Great Recession, Depression, currency wars, trade wars, leading to the first great war of the 21st century. And at the core of this war, no matter how it will be historically engineered, it didn't start because of repressive regimes, the thirst for democracy, religious strife, or territorial disputes. It all came down to money, power, and greed. Didn't we just quote that? Seems like there was a gentleman who happened to be the brother of our Savior in the fourth chapter of his letter. The causes of war, right there. Lest you think the war hasn't started, continue a little bit. In fact, the world is already at war. This is page 48 at the end. In this case, autumn. This is his autumn. Yeah, this is the autumn. This is the next one that was done in October. It's autumn 2012, October 8th came out. He says, the subhead, last page, 48, first great war of the 21st century. So he's picking up the theme of the one earlier. He says, in fact, the world is already at war. How many more riots and protests would have to erupt in India, Spain, Portugal, Greece, Egypt, Tunisia, South Africa, and other depressed, ravaged countries before the experts and authorities would call it class warfare? How many more civil wars have to break out in Syria, Libya, Yemen, Bahrain, and the Middle East, North Africa, and African countries before the experts and authorities call it regional war? How many more people have to die in the decade-long Afghan war that bled into Pakistan and in the Iraq war that turned into a civil war before the experts and authorities call them endless wars? How many more bases must the United States open in Africa, and how widely must it spread its military presence throughout the Asian Pacific theater before it becomes clear that Chinese-Anglo conflict is inevitable? How many more conflicts must erupt between China, Japan, Philippines, South Korea, Vietnam over disputed islands and resource-rich territorial waters before it's called a regional war? And how long before simmering political and social unrest in Hungary, Belarus, Romania, Bulgaria, Georgia, and the Caucasus boil over into civil war and regional war? How many more threats must Iran make against Israel before one attacks the other and major powers join in the conflagration? No, there's not much war going on around the world, is there? That isn't half. Of course, we've got Syria now. It's fully lit up. As we observe, compare, and weigh this secular Jeremiah's analysis and forecast based on the model that we have worked with, one he has worked with almost eerily for 32 years, I'd say that the guy's got something to say, and it seems to fit into our biblical framework. What can we conclude as we interpret these signs of the times? We see that he's not alone. He's not alone. The prophesied end time seal activity, the first four, Revelation, are indeed upon us. There's no doubt. And I can't emphasize this enough. We really need to draw closer to God, stay closer together as his children and family, Hebrews 10:25 style. Wise. Where it says, forsake not the assembling of yourselves, so much more so as that time draws nigh. As well as watch, 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 and pray, pray, pray. It is no time to go to sleep. But Salenti is not alone, as I mentioned. There are others crying out in the spiritual wilderness. A gentleman by the name of Richard Mayberry, who's taken his publication for years, is called The Early Warning Report. Kind of similar. He's very conservative as well. Just a few quick quotes from him. More perspective. In the realm of politics and economics, there is nothing happening today that hasn't occurred scores of times before. But never, never worldwide as now. So basically confirming what Salente said. To a large extent, this gentleman has written a series of books called the Uncle Eric series. They're a very good economic series for children and young adults, or even adults want to get on top of. He's an Austrian economist, which, by the way, is the closest economic model to the Bible. And it's the one that, the only one that works. Now, man is, you know, can take anything and mess it up, but it's very interesting. So that's the perspective he's coming from. To a large extent, political history is the story of governments committing suicide. Revolutions are not caused by revolutionaries. Ah, that's what Salente just said. Politicians have their morals and judgments so corrupted by their power, they steer the government off a cliff. And in the ensuing economic chaos, the revolutionaries acquire thousands of angry followers. I think he sees pretty clearly. Summarizing what we have covered so far, I believe the $120 trillion liability on top of existing tax burdens, plus the Supreme Court's blessing on runaway socialism, means the federal government is going out of business. Since the whole world has more or less the same socialist problems the U.S. does, I believe the entire globe is facing the same fork in the road: economic catastrophe, then a golden age, or economic catastrophe, and then fascism. And that's what led to World War II. Those countries, that fascism, that unholy alliance between big business and government. I'm reading a fascinating book called The Arms of Krupp. Krupp was the largest, most powerful concern in the world for many years, in the 1800s leading up to World War II. And of course, they got literally, like this with Adolf Hitler. Anyway, another story. I don't want to get off on that too much. Finally, Mr. Mayberry says, a dangerous new current concerning fascism. He says, running through politics and finance is the assumption that we must get away from ideology and just talk about what works. One writer said, we do not need to discuss ideologies. We just need a tool bag containing things that we can do. What he did not seem to recognize is that this view is itself an ideology. It is called fascism. And as I said last month, fascism is the simplest of all political systems, just 28 words. Truth is just a matter of opinion, so right or wrong are just matters of opinion. Power holders should do whatever they think necessary, no exceptions, no limits. You see where that's leading. Pretty remarkable how in sync a few of these writers really are. Quote from another. This is more mainstream, the Wall Street Journal. We also get that. It's an interesting article. Some of them are pretty good. This one's called The Magnitude of the Mess We're In. And this is co-authored by George Shultz. You probably remember that name. He was the former Secretary of Treasury under Nixon and Secretary of State under President Reagan. PhD in economics, taught at MIT. He's quite a powerful man intellectually. Not a good speaker or writer, though. But anyway, this is from an article September 17th of this year, so it's not long ago. He says, and this is more of a mainstream type of guy. This is not, somebody that's, like Salenti or Mayberry, who's Austrian economics or very conservative. This is a guy that served, Nixon, fairly conservative. But he says, the problems are close to being unmanageable now. Very understated. If we stay on the current path, they will wind up being completely unmanageable, culminating in an unwelcome explosion and crisis. Doesn't blow your socks off wordsmithing-wise, but I think we get the point. It lines up with Salenti and Mayberry. We are close to the real cliff. You see, the cliff talked about at old Foggy Bottom, better known as Washington, D.C., is not the real cliff. What I've described to you is the real cliff. Somewhere between 90 and 120 trillion of unfunded liabilities in Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, now Obamacare, etc. 120 billion. I thought our debt was 16.4 something. As you watch that meter tick. Not even close. You take that kind of a balance sheet to a bank and try to get a loan, they'd laugh you out the door. Another article, this is even more current, November 27th this year. Why 16 trillion only hints at the true U.S. debt. What's happening, old Foggy Bottom, is they are arranging the financial deck chairs on the economic Titanic. And there are article after article. There are a few people, like I said, secular Jeremiah is crying in the wilderness, they're realizing, and even some like George Shultz, more mainstream, that recognizing what we're really up against. They're afraid. And they should be. Because they don't know what we know. They don't have the peace of mind that comes from understanding the spirit of prophecy. And we know these things have to come to pass because economics is the driver, as James said, all down through history, and is setting us up for the last big one, the proto-beast. I mean, it's what Hitler was. He was the proto-beast. That system is setting this one up. And the set is in. It is there. It is irreversible. It's just a matter of how long we can string it out, kick the can down the road, as they like to say. Another couple more quick quotes. Mark Farber from CNBC.com. Prepare for a massive market meltdown. A la 1929. This was November 13th, just a little over a month ago. Morgan Stanley's doom scenario. Now there's a main line for you. It's one of the big investment banks. From CNBC.com again. Major recession in 2013. Let's go over to Europe. Faustian bargain. You know, Faustian bargain. Faust is all about selling your soul to the devil, to Mephistopheles. Well, that's what the bankers have done. The Faustian bargain between the states and the banks, and that article goes into it. It's also called fascism. Finally, just one more. It's called The Economic Collapse. This comes off of InfoWars. Gentleman by the name of Alex Jones, some of you may listen to him, very conservative. I don't subscribe to all these things that these guys say. We understand from prophecy there's a bigger picture. Certainly the U.S. and B.C. and the blessings to Abraham contribute to stabilizing the world. We are the modern spiritual grain bin, as Joseph was originally. And we have a bigger job to do. They don't understand, and that's preach the gospel. God will keep the ship afloat long enough to do that before the famine of the word comes. Anyway, they still understand the fundamentals, you might say the laws of economics, per se, like the laws of physics. This is written by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, former Assistant Secretary of Treasury under Reagan, and Professor Emeritus of Economics at Duke University, not a mean place of study. He said, economic collapse, the crumbling U.S. economy, and the end of the world. These guys, and this guy works for Salenti, by the way. He's featured as a writer quite often. So the cliff they're talking about in Washington is not the real cliff. It's just a little ditch. So much more major seal activity and its causes. Observe, compare, unlike anything in our lifetime or any lifetime. As far back as I've read in history, certainly. But more important is that we appear to be at the major hinge point. You've heard that term come in to the fore. Hinge point in history means a time, a major turning. And historians, a lot of people, like we've just read, start to recognize something is going on historically. And we know that. I'm pretty sure as end time spiritual weathermen interpret the signs of the times, the end is indeed upon us. Now, I'm not saying it's tomorrow or next day. We know there's, you know, we've got 70 weeks prophecy, you know, the 7-year covenant, etc. Europe's got to still come together, but we'll see more about that in just a moment. We've got to boogie along here. To the more specific section on prophetically significant nations and nation groups, prophetic checkpoint number 3, the beast, a.k.a. King of the North, Confederation. This is a quote from our own good news of September-October 2012. I don't know this gentleman, but he has some pretty good insight. His name is Max Hastings. This is British author, editor, and journalist. Max Hastings would agree. This is talking about the probabilities and prophecy. Is Europe heading for a crash? Just what we've been reading about. British author Max Hastings would agree. His Daily Mail article on June 19, 2012 was titled, "Europe's on the brink of probably the gravest, most frightening tumult of our lifetime." Hastings does not mince his words. The truth is that the weaker brethren of the EU, European Union, have got to go for their own sake and everybody else's. There is absolutely no happy scenario at the end of the crisis, only a choice between variations of calamity. If the Eurozone survives at all, it can only be as a German economic empire, in which the subject peoples will sooner or later find colonial status intolerable. Should there be an economic disaster in Europe, we should clearly recall that Adolf Hitler was able to come to power in 1933 primarily because of unprecedented runaway inflation and economic hardship in Germany. This is from the November-December 12th, a view of where Europe is really headed. It's long been apparent that the European Union has, with its predecessors such as the EC, has been slowly stealing sovereignty from the individual nations, seriously undermining the democratic statehood, their statehood. Eurocrats who earnestly desire a centralized federal union strongly favor these long-term trends. It's interesting, Britain right now as we speak is thinking about backing out of the EU. Václav Klaus, who is the president of the Czech Republic, certainly a stalwart after the collapse of the Berlin Wall, he says, the new push for European Union federation, complete with its own head of state and army, is the final phase of the destruction of democracy in the nation state. He sees it coming. He says he warned that certain European politicians had opened the door for European superstate. Finally, European Commission President José Manuel Barroso said that he would put forward proposals for a fully fledged EU federation in 2014. That's basically about a year away. There's more going on than that, though, behind the scenes that we'll see in a moment. From the Der Spiegel, one of the largest publications in Germany. Remember Mr. Armstrong talking about it and quoting it way back the days when we talked about Franz Josef Strauss being the beast and even inviting him over to Ambassador College. That was quite a time. I was down at Big Sandy at the time, and he was brought down there and had a chance to speak to the student body, etc. It was an interesting time. Of course, he's died several years ago now. But this is from Der Spiegel. Not just on the fringes. It said, far-right attitudes increase in Germany. This is 11/12/2012. Right-wing extremist attitudes are on the rise in parts of Germany, particularly in the East. And it goes on to talk about what's driving that. From CNBC.com, depression, suicides rise as Euro debt crisis intensifies. In other words, there's a lot of what they call Euro angst. There's a lot of anxiety over there. This is September 4th of this year. Also from CNBC.com, Dalio fears social unrest that led to Hitler's rise. This is September 21st. Very interesting article. I'm just going to hit the highlights. This is a very interesting article from the London Times, Financial Times, October 22nd this year. Welcome to Berlin. Europe's new capital. Wait a minute, I thought it was in Brussels. And of course, the article goes on to show where the real capital is and where it's heading. And then finally, there's a quote again from the September-October World News and Prophecy section of the Good News. Big changes afoot in Europe. Europe's currency crisis has highlighted the need for a closer European integration. The realization being that only a single central government can solve the problems confronting the European Union. To this end, 10 EU foreign ministers participating in a study group for the future of Europe aim to exert pressure to transform the EU into a federation along the lines of the US. Together, they have prepared what the front page article in Depressa describes as a plan for transformation into a European state. And then it lists the 10 countries. Interesting. No Britain, Ireland, France, or Scandinavia. Only Denmark is in this group. They're getting serious because they know they are at the precipice. They're a little more realistic in some respects. Some respects, they're very unrealistic over there. But the Germans tend to get real, real quick, as we saw in times past. The rest of Europe will float along, you know. You go to Paris, gay Paris, and the Riviera, and Italy, etc. Hey, it's good food and the wine. You know, you want to have a good time over there, right? Germans don't operate that way. They don't tolerate a stability vacuum. And they've got a big one. Does this series of quotes say anything about the formation of the beast, a.k.a. the King of the North Confederation? I'd say volumes. Like I said, even the big number 10, the nations of Revelation 13 and 17. So right before our eyes, we're seeing it confederate, come together. Prophetic checkpoint number 4, the Muslim Caliphate, a.k.a. the King of the South Confederation. What's going on around and south of Jerusalem these days? Well, we know what's going on in right north of them, in Syria. It was interesting, just yesterday, an article came out. King Abdullah and President Netanyahu are getting together and they're talking about a joint alliance. And isn't it interesting? I've always been fascinated by Daniel 11. It says, when the beast power comes down and sweeps over the Holy Land and sets up shop in Jerusalem and takes out all the Arab nations in that caliphate that is to come, that confederation of Islam, the one nation that is spared is Jordan. It's called Moab, Ammon, and Edom. I've been there. We went to the feast there. Some of you maybe have realized that's where modern Jordan is. Of course, the capital of Jordan is Amman. It's very interesting. They're coming together talking about a joint for the Palestinians, for the what they call the West Bank. Not so much Gaza, because Gaza is more infected by Hamas. So we'll see where that goes. So anyway, what's going on in and around? Well, we know the wars and things that have been going on. We just got through with a quick hitter down in Gaza. But what's going on in Egypt is very interesting with Morsi. You do realize that in order to have a Islamic caliphate, in other words, a confederation of all the Islamic states, they had to get rid of all the tin horn dictators, starting with Saddam Hussein. And of course, now we've had Mubarak, we've had Gaddafi, looks like Bashar Assad is about ready to go. There have been other lesser luminaries in some of the others, like Yemen and some of the other areas. They have to go, and they have to be replaced by something like the Islamic Brotherhood in Egypt, which has the strongest or one of the strongest armies in all the Mideast, and based on Sharia law. We'll see more about that in a moment. Quote here. This comes from Arutz Shiva. It is an Israeli news service that I follow. The headline is, and this is as of earlier this year, 2012, it looks like it's either September 5th or it's May 9th. Get confused, probably May 9th. It says, nobody like Ahmadinejad since Hitler, says Peres. Peres is the president of Israel. It says, no one since Hitler, except for Ahmadinejad, has declared a desire to destroy an entire people and eliminate a country, Peres says. Very interesting article. There's another one from Der Spiegel. This is 1031. This is would be October. It says, nervous on the Nile. Minorities fear the end of secularism in Egypt. And of course, they just passed with a referendum their new constitution, and you know, Morsi's doing all the nicey-nice talk about, oh, we're going to preserve, you know, certainly all the aspects of a true republic, and we're going to honor certainly human rights, etc. When he took office as Egypt's new president in June, Mohammed Morsi pledged to follow a pluralist policy that respected the rights of women, non-Muslim minorities. But everything he's done since then indicates he intends to replace the secularist dictatorship of his predecessor with an Islamist one based on Sharia law. And that's exactly what they've done. Now, they're going to ease it in. They've got to be careful, but you can start to see it coming. So anyway, quoted that. This is the last quote. This is interesting. Remember the name Al-Baradei? He's an Egyptian. He led the UN watchdog force that went into Iran to observe their nuclear program. He's got a lot of respect throughout the Middle East and particularly in Egypt. He says, he speaks out against Morsi. He says, not even the pharaohs had so much authority. Well, that's interesting. Pretty bright guy, too. Nuclear physicist. Pretty sharp. Strong evidence that we're watching a steady movement toward a Muslim caliphate, I think. King of the South. Prophetically significant? I would say so. Whether these individuals are the ones we will see. Okay, checkpoint number 5, modern Israel, not Judah. This is U.S. and B.C., etc., and the other northern 10 tribes. What's the pulse of old Uncle Sugar these days? Now, I've read quite a bit already. I think you've got a good feel for it, but it takes several sermons on it. The point being, all the quotes we've given puts us in a position where Uncle Sugar is very, very sick. And he's just limping along. I've mentioned their state's threatening secession. I even have an article on cannibalism rearing its head again. National bankruptcy, both financially and morally, literally stare us in the face. And horrible natural catastrophes, the kinds not visited. We just coming back from the feast just missed Big Sandy by 1 week. We pulled into the Brooklyn cruise ship terminal. A week later, that area and areas around there, Staten Island, etc., would be inundated. We're very fortunate, but that baby was 1,000 miles across in diameter. That's a big storm. And it's wreaked tremendous havoc. They still haven't recovered, even close. It's a sad day to see our wonderful land, beloved country, coming to what it is. But that day has arrived. Checkpoint number 6. This is little brother at the east end of the Mediterranean Sea. I missed a quote here, excuse me. Let me just catch a couple of quotes here. This is from the Autumn Trends Journal. It says, the next 4 years an American tragedy. A bad ending or a new beginning? The goal of trend forecasting is to predict the probable course of the future by extrapolating from verifiable facts and data. More often than not, the facts and data lead to inescapable conclusions. Conclusions we have come to in this issue of the Trends Journal we regard as near inescapable. But there's one wild card that can lead to a different conclusion, and that wild card is you. I call it the Nineveh principle. And we have an example or two in the Bible where an entire nation actually repented and fasted, and God forgave them temporarily. Now we know that Assyria, Book of Nineveh, of course, Jonah visited, was to be the rod of God's anger. And he used them, of course, to take the northern 10 tribes into captivity. But it was interesting, before that, he was going to go ahead and destroy them, and they actually repented. So it's not impossible. The course of history that we have forecast can be changed, however likely it may appear. It is not predestined. And God says the same thing. However he lays out, God knows the potential, and he can direct his plan as he chooses because he knows human nature. And, of course, with Satan, it makes it 99.999% probabilities. It's going to happen that way. It's more than just a secular challenge. It's not change you can believe in, political hype. Charting our future and creating our own destiny is a divine responsibility. This guy has a lot of interesting things to say. He goes on to say, let me see if I can pick this up. But at this juncture, as detailed in the following pages, the most commanding trends are not leading toward a pan-societal transformation. Instead, they point unmistakably to a rapid declining United States superpower, a disintegrating Europe, and an economic meltdown in a world gearing up for war. On every front, there's chaos, failing economies, deadly foreign policy. I think anybody would have to be blind, and I'll put the other things in, you can plug in the others, to realize that Benghazi Gate far exceeds Watergate. And yet, look at the pass our current government is being given. It's very sad to watch this happen. I mean, you know, it's just, things are going on that you just, you know, you never thought would happen. Far worse than those errors. On every front, there's chaos, all man-made disasters caused by madmen and madwomen. And who will be chosen to fix them? The same madmen and madwomen who had the hand in creating them. It's like the old definition of insanity. It's doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. God's allowing us to reap our own whirlwind. He's rubbing our noses in it. But here's the key. The leadership vacuum. These negative trends do not happen on their own. They took enormous amounts of time, money, and energy to develop. Behind each of them are the all too familiar names and faces that were instrumental in pushing through and promoting policies that were destined to become monumental failures. We know they're a reflection of our character as a nation, and God is not blessing us anymore. He doesn't know that. He just observes it. He says there's something terribly wrong. And as he compares the history and looks at the fundamentals, he sees where it's heading. We know the causes. He kind of does. In this trends journal, we provide indisputable facts and data to substantiate our analysis and conclusions. The United States is in the grip of the greatest leadership vacuum in its history, at a time when it most needs righteous, trustworthy, principled leaders. The bot says it all. We don't have any anymore. There are no principled men in Foggy Bottom. And that can only lead one way. Does that remind you of anything? How about Isaiah 3? Isaiah 3:1. We've talked about it. Mr. Armstrong preached about it, that it was coming. Today we see it. As they rearrange the financial deck chairs on the economic Titanic, they haven't a clue what the real cliff's all about. Chapter 3, verse 1. This day is upon us. See now the Lord Almighty, is about to take from Jerusalem and Judah, and that means Israel and Judah by extension, both supply and support, all supplies of food and all supplies of water. The hero and the warrior, the judge and the prophet, the soothsayer and the elder, the captain of 50, the man of rank, the counselor, the skilled craftsman, the clever enchanter. And I will make boys their officials, and mere children will govern them. Never is there time that that is more true. History repeating itself. This is one from Cal Thomas. It says, 4 more years of decline. This is November 6th. This is from the Jewish World Review. He says, great nations and proud empires have always collapsed from within before they were conquered from without. Mr. Armstrong preached that for years, you know, the modern Rome. Remember that booklet when it came out. In 2012, nothing appears to embarrass us. Snooki, Honey Boo Boo, reality TV wives, look at what is paraded before us as normal. Oppose the new normal. And it's you who are the anomaly. Young people are taught in public schools, at major universities, on television, movies, that every life choice is acceptable and every tenet open to interpretation. In other words, no absolutes. No one has to be personally responsible. Other signs of cultural decay are accepted with little notice. According to data from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, 40% of babies born in America are born to unmarried women. Shrug. Abortion clinics continue to operate. Yawn. There's no longer any cultural corrective because we have abandoned the concept of objective truth. Nothing is right or wrong because that suggests a standard by which right and wrong might be defined. Personal choice is the new standard, which is no standard at all. Sound like Judges 21, and everybody did that which is right in their own eyes. One might well develop individual weights and measures. Make up your own laws. According to a recent Pew poll, a growing number of people, especially young people, no longer believe in God or religion. And this, and in our increasing flirtation with socialism, America is becoming more like Europe. Government seems to be replacing God as the only acceptable deity. So there are a lot of them out there that recognize what's going on. That's the deterioration of good old Uncle Sugar. Little brother to the East End, I mentioned. A couple quick quotes on them as we wrap up here. Zip through 6 through 10. We know thousands are being called up. I don't know if you've heard or not about the Samson complex. I may have mentioned it times past. Modern Judah has what's called the Samson complex. Simply stated, they will bring down the house of mankind, rather with their nukes, one of the most powerful nuclear arsenals in the world, then go through another Holocaust. And they are being pushed by the likes of Ahmadinejad. This is interesting. For those of you who recall Daniel 9 and what is called the 70 weeks prophecy, it talks about a moment in time when the beast power, the king of the north, will come together with modern Judah. And they will make a covenant that will last 7 years. Well, a covenant for 7 years will last 3.5. Here's an article that talks about what's going on, and I don't know if anybody could see this day coming. This is Der Spiegel again, June of this year. Helping Israel defend itself is Germany's duty. Opposition parties in Germany are demanding answers about the sale of nuclear-capable submarines to Israel, while Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said that the vessels are very important to his country's security. Media commentators argue that Germany has a historical duty to support the Jewish state. How many people saw that one coming? Nuclear submarines, the most powerful weapons ever devised by men. They're almost undetectable. They can carry an incredible arsenal of multiple nuclear warheads. Interesting. Let's get a little closer to the Jewish religious front. It's an article from the Temple Institute. It's called, titled here, this is a news article, October 18th this year. It states, building a synagogue on the Temple Mount. By the way, right now there's a lot of sensitivity. They won't allow the Hasidim. 10% of Israel is what they call the Hasidim or Orthodox Jews. They have that representation in the Knesset. So 90% of Israel is basically atheistic. I've been told that by Israelis. So here they're talking about building a synagogue on the Temple Mount. And, of course, they won't even allow them up there because it's such a tinderbox. It says, building a synagogue on the Temple Mount will underline Israel's sovereignty while also guaranteeing the freedom of access to all religions that is at the heart of the government policy. May the day soon come when that prayer and others like it can be recited freely by Jews in a place where the temple once stood and will yet stand again. This is from the Temple Mount Faithful organization. A call to everyone in the world to send a letter to the Pope. Hear this one? The Temple Mount and Land of Israel Faithful Movement sent a letter to Pope Benedict XVI in Rome, and this was written earlier this year, the end of February, requesting him to return to Israel without delay The Holy Temple menorah, vessels and treasures that were stolen by the Romans and taken to Rome when they destroyed the second temple in Jerusalem 70 AD. These temple vessels will be used by the priests of Israel in the Holy Third Temple. A letter to the Pope has that letter in detail, what they requested. That's pretty bold. There's another one from the same institute. The golden bell and temple seal used by the high priest found near the Holy Temple Mount. Now you have to realize these people have already put together everything it takes to prefab a temple and furbish it. It's all done off-site, just like in David's day. He had it all prefabbed, so then when Solomon came on, there would be very little actual activity on site. It would just, you know, put up, put together. It was prefab. They have the stones, the wood that's necessary. They have the altar. They have the clothes of the priest. They've identified the priesthood, the Kohanim. Anybody named Kohen is more than likely a Levite. They've done DNA tests, and the markers can indicate that tribe. They found the red heifer and identified one that would fit the Bible standard, which is need to purify the priesthood. They have the Urim and Thummim. They have the vessels. They have all kinds of things, and they have an altar already built off-site. Okay, with that thought in mind, it says, the Temple Mount Land of Israel Faithful Movement, this is another message from God of Israel to His people Israel. Build my holy temple now without delay. This is about 6 months ago. This came out at the end of April. 7 months or so. About 8 maybe. For almost 2,000 years, the land of Israel waited for the return of her Israelite sons and daughters to the promised land. It happened in 48. It is considered another clear call and timely message from God of Israel to His people Israel. Build my temple on my holy temple mount in Jerusalem now with no delay. The Temple Mount and Land of Israel Faithful Movement heard this call of God and will continue answering it with even more intensity and devotion. We shall not rest day or night until the holy third temple of the God of Israel, the beloved creator of the universe, is built during the lifetime of this generation. This golden bell and temple seal that were found were used originally, found around the temple in the diggings, were originally used in part of the clothing of the original high priest. These guys are intent. They are dogged. They are planning to do it. They, you know, feel these are signs for their signs. There's stuff going on all over. Okay, we're just about to wrap up here. Checkpoint number 7. The last of the big four, the hordes of the East. Three major core Eastern Gog and Magog countries, China, India, and Russia, I mentioned earlier, represent some 40% of the world's population, harboring great nuclear arsenals and prodigious armies. And they are burying their geopolitical chests and rattling their mighty collective sabers. Of course, Putin just came out and said we can't adopt babies from Russia anymore. Cut off his nose to spite his face. It's quite the leader. Gog and Magog are getting ready for their end-time trumpet appearance. Quote from, in this case, the Prophetic Times, comes from Jim Tuck out in the Oakland, San Francisco area, one of our ministers. It says, China submarines too soon carry nukes, Draft U.S. report says. And that was as of November this year. Russian nuclear subs spotted near U.S. East Coast, November 6th. And Russia's defense spending surges as U.S. is cut. It's also November 5th. They're getting ready. Checkpoint 8, to the greatest nation of all spiritual Israel. The advanced kingdom of God in embryo. As we've watched a Gideon-like reduction in our numbers over the years, we've also watched God bless us and open great doors. We've seen that recently with some of the Mideast, and of course we've had to go through a belt tightening as we adjust from the changes in that Gideon-like reduction. But it just takes us to Zechariah 4:6, where it says, not by might or strength, but by my power, my spirit. Job will get done. It forces us to be, you know, rely on Him more more faith, and certainly he's opened the doors. The things we're putting together now through the internet, it's the most powerful tool Mr. Armstrong couldn't even imagine. His heyday, and was starting, you know, at that time, I think there was an inkling of it, but back when he died in 86. But the tools are there, and he'll provide enough income. The work will go on, and we'll get the job done. Finally, as we close out our prophetic checklist, we arrive at the key to bringing it all together. For nothing in this world, good or evil, is accomplished without strong leadership. I think we realize that in any venture. And the final cast of characters will represent the strongest, most powerful, the most charismatic group in history. The dynamic leader of the Pan-Arab League, Checkpoint 9, the Muslim Caliph to come, or King of the South. At this point, there's no Anwar Sadat. There is no great warrior statesman of the Suleiman the Magnificent of the 1500s who has stepped forward to accept the pan-Islamic mantle. Ahmadinejad, I don't think, is a serious player. He's too extreme, too radical. He's not enough of a diplomat. However, Egypt, you know, with their strong army, new leader. I don't know if Mohamed Morsi, but we're just getting to know him. We'll see what kind of a guy. The fact he's able to slip a Sharia-based constitution through a nation of about 80 to 85 million people, I mean, you know, we'll see. That's one to certainly stay tuned on. He's worth watching. Checkpoint 10. Finally, the dynamic duo of the beast and the false prophet. You might say Satan's surrogates most foul. Again, like the Islamic caliph to come, there are no strong leaders on the near horizon. With a look at the future home of the false prophet for a moment, the Vatican, we see in residence a tired, aging pontiff. He's the third oldest on record, all time. And the oldest for over 100 years. He's ready to step aside. Final article here. It's called, from Der Spiegel, June this year, Exhausted in the Vatican, the Final Battles of Pope Benedict XVI. The mood at the Vatican is apocalyptic. More on that in a minute. Pope Benedict XVI seems tired, both unable and unwilling to seize the reins amid fierce infighting and scandal. Of course, they had that scandal, one of their guards over there. While Vatican insiders jockey for power and speculate on his successor, Joseph Ratzinger has withdrawn to focus on his still ambiguous legacy. Joseph Ratzinger turned 85 in April. That makes him the oldest pope in 109 years, and one of the few popes who have exercised what Benedict calls the enormous office at such an advanced age. In the Curia, and that's the group, the administrative group within the Vatican that chooses the next pope, in the back rooms of the Vatican's palaces, efforts are already underway to search for a successor. Possible outcomes of a conclave are analyzed and candidates are discussed, as was done 7 years ago. Some say the next pope should be someone like Pope Pius XII, the pope between 39 and 58, who was a calculating and predictable power player. Isn't that interesting? Calculating and predictable power player. I mentioned in sermons in the past, there are fascinating Catholic prophecies. And I say that in quotes, for I think we all realize only God can prophesy, truly. Now, he can allow Satan to do certain things to serve his purposes. And he has in the past. You can go back, for example, 1 Kings 22, where he allowed lying spirits to go ahead and deceive King Ahab and lead him into war. So he's not against using the demons for his own purposes. Those prophecies point to and indicate that this current pope is the last before the final pope is to be named Roman Peter. There are a lot of indications, both prophetically and even in, there is an antechamber in the Vatican where they have, and I have a friend of mine, one of my best friends, was in the service and they toured this. And he says, yeah, back, this was in the 60s. He said, I remember looking, there were only like four spots left, four or five. Now there's only one in this bus chamber or photo chamber, whatever you want to call it. His name is to be Roman Peter. Kind of an interesting historical symmetry to it, if it holds true, for, of course, the very first pope was named Peter. Again, stay tuned as we watch this tired 85-year-old German pontiff waiting for the last of Satan's vicars. Vicars, one who stands and represents Christ. Step on the world scene. Could be soon. Like I said, 85, his health isn't great. Could happen. A lot of things going on. So how are your spiritual weather skills? You feel that you can interpret those oh-so-important signs of the times? As Christ admonished in Matthew 16, observe them, compare them. And weigh them in the prophetic scheme of things that God has given us, that framework. It's very important. He castigated the leadership of his day for not being able. And he says we should be able to. As we trudge down our road on the path to Armageddon, good watching and good praying.